Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Have you been following our new Littles project? We want you to get involved in it. All this month, we're looking at the new Littles, ethnic communities around the city that you may not know about. We've already talked about Little Liberia on Staten Island, Little Uzbekistan in southern Brooklyn, and whether the new Little Italy is in Astoria or Whitestone. Now we're calling on all you artists and illustrators to get in on the project. Submit your illustrated neighborhood maps of New York City, representing all of these lesser-known neighborhoods that we've been talking about. Let's make a map, one that shows the true neighborhood diversity of New York. A list of the new Littles is available for you to work from, and instructions for how to submit your illustration on our website. We'll feature our favorites on the air, online, and elsewhere. Artists and illustrators, we want you to make our new Littles project into a beautiful illustrated map. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Rick Brookhiser is back with us, the National Review columnist, historian, and biographer of American founders, including George Washington and Alexander Hamilton. Maybe you saw his documentary, Rediscovering Hamilton, on PBS this spring. We'll talk to Rick now about the evolving face of American conservatism as his latest book is released in paperback, Right Time, Right Place, Coming of Age with William F. Buckley, Jr. Hi, Rick. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. It's good to be back.
I want to use our time to take a few examples of ways that Republican or conservative positions seem to be changing in the last few years and get your take on what the change means in terms of the broad sweep of conservative thought and what Buckley may have thought. And let's begin with global warming. I want to play three clips from Morning Edition today from a story on conservative change on the issue. Here was John McCain while running for president in 2008.
The facts of global warming demand our urgent attention, especially in Washington.
Here is Tim Pawlenty running for president now after supporting cap and trade as governor of Minnesota.
I was wrong. It was a mistake. And I'm sorry. It's ham-fisted. It's going to be harmful to the economy.
And here is Republican hopeful Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann with the full-throated climate change denial.
Carbon dioxide is natural. It occurs in Earth. Carbon dioxide is not a harmful gas. It is a harmless gas.
So, Rick Brookhiser, I don't know where you are on global warming or what to do about it, but cap and trade used to be seen as a market solution. Now it's just a tax. Do the clips we heard represent something larger about the direction of conservatism at this moment?
I think they do. I think there's you know, there's been an awareness, an increasing awareness of what people are doing with global warming, or what some people wish to do with it. You know, there's a structure of international treaties or attempts to write international treaties or agreements that would control the emissions of the most industrialized countries. There was one of the big conferences was at Kyoto. They keep having subsequent ones in different places. And I think John McCain was a lagging indicator, sort of behind the curve. But other conservatives have seen with alarm that their efforts to use global warming as an instrument of really industrial policy and reshaping industrial policy, imposing regimes of taxes and regulations to try and settle this worldwide, and that's a kind of thing that tends to alarm conservatives.
That's interesting, because to liberals the shift is either pandering to the oil companies because they're big donors, or denying science to avoid the necessary pain to consumers of making energy probably more expensive. You're saying that conservatives reject an overreaction to it that uses global warming as a hook to reshape a larger industrial policy, but they're not going to put it that way in a televised debate.
Well, this tells you why I'm not running for office, okay?
Right.
You know, I gave a kind of a long and some might say mush-mouthed walk through it. These days, you got to be quicker than that.
But why wouldn't that have been the same concern in 2008, where certainly liberals were trying to do the same thing with it, if we see it that way, it is now?
Things, you know, things change. People settle into problems. They come to understand the dimensions of them. The scandal of the English climate scientists who were cooking their data in order to produce some of the graphs and charts that are used to illustrate the problem of global warming. That's a relatively new thing. I don't think that had broken in 2008. So, you know, a lot of these issues, aspects, they're developments, and people react to those developments.
Another example of the center seeming to be redefined as the left is on the Romney health care plan, the model for the Obama plan. And people talk about this as a Romney issue. Did he flip-flop or whatever? But on the plan, I think it was originally seen as somewhat centrist, using a subsidized market to put the uninsured mostly into private plans rather than go for a Canadian-style single payer like Vermont is doing now. But now RomneyCare/Obamacare, or Obamnicare as Tim Pawlenty would have it, might as well be the Soviet Union as far as Republican politics are concerned. Again, did the center move?
Well, I think it's a reaction. It's a reaction to Obama's success in getting at least the first elements of a national health care plan in place. And you know, whatever you want to say about Barack Obama, he did make that happen, and that's a huge, potentially a huge thing for American government, and with vast economic implications, implications for people's relationships with their doctors. And I think there was a current through the whole conservative movement and much of the Republican Party in reaction to that. And poor Romney, that's the millstone around him. I mean, he's a very attractive candidate in a lot of ways, but he looks like the John the Baptist of the Obama health care plan. And
right.
how he deals with that, it will be an interesting tale.
But what are you saying, that conservatives who used to be sort of okay with the Romney plan, and I know there was conservative criticism of it at the time.
There always was.
As there was liberal criticism of it, but because it became affiliated with Obama and Obama had a success, they turned against it, because that would make it pure politics, who wins, who loses, rather than a reinspection of the issue.
Well, Romney Care, however good or bad it was, and I'm assuming it's bad, that was just in the state of Massachusetts. And now we have it in all 50. The dimensions of the problem are very different. So it's not just the politics of it. It's the scope and the effect on the entire country.
National Review columnist Richard Brookhiser, author of Right Time, Right Place, Coming of Age with William F. Buckley, Jr., here's another, and this one may be more complicated from a conservative standpoint, on foreign policy. We know the Bush-Cheney legacy, regardless of anyone's stand on it. Here is Mitt Romney in last week's Republican debate on the war in Afghanistan.
It's time for us to bring our troops home as soon as we possibly can. And I want those troops to come home based upon not politics, not based upon economics, but instead based upon the conditions on the ground determined by the generals. But I also think we've learned that our troops shouldn't go off and try and fight a war of independence for another nation.
Our troops shouldn't go off and fight a war of independence for another nation. In historical terms, Rick, is there a conservative pendulum on military interventionism that is somehow Bush to Romney as an example of something?
I think we're in a very unsettled time with foreign policy. We have a problem in the Muslim world, and the radicals, the terrorists who are trying to bring down our world. That's nothing less than that are they trying to accomplish. It looked simpler. It certainly seemed more dramatic, if I can use that word, after 9/11. But I sensed even after 9/11 that this was going to be a 30 years war. This was not going to be anything quick at all. And I think we're into it. We're into the first decade of it. People have a sense of losing their way. It's partly the long slog in Afghanistan, but it's also looking at now we're bombing Libya. It seems to be spreading without direction or control. So there's a lot of unhappiness, a lot of uncertainty. Conservatives, I think, really have to make some hard thinking and make some hard choices about where the crucial danger points are, where the strategic turning points might be, and how does the United States, which doesn't have infinite resources, I mean, we're a huge economy, but it's not an infinite one, how do we use our resources to target the key points in the enemy that we face?
On the question of crucial targets and key points, do you think conservatives are rethinking the original motivation for Iraq? Assume the weapons of mass destruction program was there. It was still a war to protect a hypothetical future, or against a hypothetical future, where Saddam Hussein might have developed his weapons to a mature point and might have someday shared them with al-Qaeda. That's the debate we were having in 2002.
Right.
For that, we went in and 100,000 people or more died, including thousands of Americans. Is there sort of, you know, conservative intellectual introspection on that?
Well, I think the form it takes is... Is this a war to be won by improving or changing the political culture in the Middle East? I mean, that was a big part of what Bush was saying, especially in his second inaugural. And he said that to every human heart, the desire for freedom comes at some point, and we have to be mindful of that. We can't just be, you know, picking friendly dictators in this part of the world. We have to have a broader agenda of liberation. That is very ambitious if you just state it plainly like that without qualifications. I mean, it seems too ambitious. But conservatives have to look at that and see, how would you affect such a thing? What are steps towards it? How do you go about doing this? Or is it the way to go at all? I tend to agree with reservations with Bush that is the key. But again, you can't advance on all fronts at once. You have to see what the most important ones are, and you have to pick your battles. And there has to be a lot more strategic thinking about that.
By the way, do you credit the war in Iraq and that freedom agenda generally, as President Bush was articulating it for a time, at all for the Arab Spring? Most people in the Middle East, and certainly most liberals on foreign policy, would reject any connection.
I think there's some. The world has no doors anymore in a lot of ways. People see what's going around everywhere. Everything is everywhere. There's a lot more awareness of what's going on in different places. So obviously there is some connection with what's going on. It's also, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood making a power play. It's specific local factors in different countries. It was the drama of this poor man in Tunisia who burned himself, and suddenly that seemed to speak to the psyche of a lot of people in Tunisia and Egypt and elsewhere. Big historical movements can rarely be pinpointed to one thing. You've got to look at a number of factors. But Bush certainly kicked a hornet's nest.
What do you
and
think?
Kicking a hornet's nest releases a lot of hornets.
What do you think Buckley would think today about the Bush-Karl Rove legacy? I think they tried to establish a modern conservatism where they were super hawks on foreign policy post 9/11, piously evangelical on religious issues like abortion and stem cell research, very pro-corporate and tax-cutting for the rich, but a little bit big government, big tent too, friendly to Mexican immigration, policy that failed,
mm-hmm.
willing to finance Medicare Part D and No Child Left Behind as sort of social projects. Did it ever make sense as an integrated philosophy? And did Buckley talk about that before he died?
Well, I never thought it made sense as an integrated philosophy. National Review was very skeptical of the compassionate conservative aspects of it. Bill himself was also very skeptical about the war in Iraq. before he died. I mean, he more than skeptical. He was calling for getting out as early as 05, certainly as early as 06. He did come around to supporting the surge, however. And his reason for that was that having committed itself, America should try to make a war succeed. In other words, you don't want to back out of an effort that you have begun, and so he was willing to see if the surge would work. And he did say in the last board of directors meeting before he died that the struggle against Islamic radicalism was the great challenge of the next generation, even as communism had been the challenge of his. So he was there.
And on the domestic front?
Pardon me?
And on the domestic front?
Well, he was, small government man economically to the end, and conservative in his social views, though I think he was there was some restiveness with him there about some of the strict pro-life line. I disagreed with him. I support a strict pro-life policy and for conservatism and for the country, but I think he was increasingly unhappy with it.
Are you fighting or opposed to the legal gay marriage movement, or have you joined the what seems to be an increasingly bipartisan tide on that one, of at least acceptance?
Well, the tide eddies, doesn't it? One of my old friends from college, Maggie Gallagher, is having, surprising success at turning some of these legislative fights in deep blue states like Maryland. So let's not.
She's for only traditional marriage.
That's right. So that struggle is by no means over.
Even as you get Breitbart hosting conservative political action conference, gay Republican parties.
No, that's right. But the end has not happened yet.
We have about a minute left. Remind our listeners, how close were you to William F. Buckley, and what are you trying to accomplish with the book now out in paperback?
Well, the book was it was a look at 40 years of political history. That's the time frame. It was a portrait of a famous man and a great man whom I saw up close for a long time and worked with. And it was also a memoir of our relationship and of our friendship. He was my mentor. He was the first person to publish me. He published me when I was 15 years old. He told me I would be his successor. And then a few years later, he changed his mind and told me, no, you're not going to be my successor. So it's a story of a young man trying to navigate a relationship with a brilliant and imposing and sometimes a capricious mentor.
Richard Brookhiser, National Review columnist, historian, biographer of American founders, including George Washington and Alexander Hamilton. His Alexander Hamilton, Rediscovering Hamilton documentary was on PBS this spring. His book, now out in paperback, Right Time, Right Place, Coming of Age, with William F. Buckley, Jr. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. And coming up next, talk about empty nest syndrome. We will follow up on the NYU hawk cam that captivated thousands of New Yorkers. Now that Pip, the baby hawk that the city fell in love with, is getting ready to fly away from mom and dad. Stay with us.